You are listening to Norra Saltkråkan, a podcast about an island in Stockholm Northern Archipelago. The island of Norra became famous in Sweden in the 60s because of several well-known movies and TV series by Astrid Lindgren was filmed here. In the podcast, we will talk about Norra's inhabitants from the past and about us who live now and always long to go there. My family moved to Norra in the 1830s from a nearby island. My grandfather, Gunnar Sjöblom, was born here in the end of the 19th century, and my name is Mikael Ek, and I go to Norra when the ice disappears in the spring. My friend Lisa Harris was born in London and lives on the island of Tenerife in the Canary Islands. She has traveled the world on a motorbike together with her husband Ray. Last summer, she came to Norra for her first time in the archipelago. Welcome to Norra Saltkråkan-podden. This is the first session in English. And today we have Lisa Harris, born in London, but now living in Tenerife, which is an island in the middle of the Atlantic. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you for having me, Mikke. I'm very excited.
Yes, very excited. And Lisa actually were at Saltkråkan Norra. She actually came to Norra this summer to visit me and my wife, Anna. So, have you been to Sweden before?
Yes, Mikke, I was in Sweden probably about 25 years ago with my husband, and we drove to Sweden from London on our motorbike through Europe, through France and Belgium and into Germany and then into Denmark and finally into Sweden. So we did a nice trip in November.
So in November?
Yes, and so it was a little bit cold, I must say, on the motorbike, and we camped, and we were also staying in some youth hostels, which, and it was a beautiful time, actually, yeah, through the forests, and we saw some beaches, and we didn't get as far as Stockholm. I think the weather sort of changed our minds, and so we decided to head back south. But it was an amazing introduction to Sweden.
But why November in Sweden with a motorbike? Haven't you checked the weather?
Well, I suppose coming from England, we were used to cold weather. And I think it just happened to be a time where we had some time, free time from work. And so it just worked out. So I think the trip was about a month, the whole thing. But it was wonderful, yeah, going through Europe and going also through Denmark was really interesting. And we visited the lovely mermaid in Copenhagen. And yeah, I just have memories of it being quite cold, though. And I remember we had lots of rain gear on and leathers to keep ourselves warm. And we stayed in these wonderful youth hostels in Sweden, often in the forest, and seemed like they were in the middle of nowhere, and it was always very warm when we went inside. And I remember we had to take off all our leathers, and there was plenty of food, but I remember it being quiet and feeling the nature, which for us was really important coming from London and a big city of sort of from outer London, 25 million people. So feeling that space and that nature in Sweden was what really touched us.
And this summer you came back to Sweden for a second time to visit us. And how was this different? You flew in this time.
So many years later, I went back to Sweden, and I flew from Tenerife via Malaga, because in the summer there's no direct flights from Tenerife to Sweden to Stockholm. And it was a nice journey, and I remember arriving at the airport and it's all very clean and modern and had a nice feel. And I remember flying over Sweden and arriving at the airport and feeling the green and the sort of wet, boggy nature, which has been so different to the high temperatures last summer of Tenerife, which were in the 40s. So it really felt nice to visually just see the green and some clouds. So that was very refreshing.
So I think we jumped straight away to, we actually went out to Norröra. And how was being in the Stockholm archipelago for you?
That was amazing. So for many years, for 12 or 13 years, I've known Mikke. And he would always talk about this beautiful island, Norröra. And I was lucky enough that I went there last summer. And I think even just starting the journey from getting on the boat and then going out to sea in the Baltic and then arriving at this peaceful haven, a gem, and arriving at the little pontoon or jetty and placing the boat on the jetty and how green the grass was and then walking up to their house, to Mikke and Anna's house. And everything was just so beautiful, so picturesque, so peaceful, so full of this green, wonderful nature. And that was my first impression, the beauty and that lovely grass up to your house, Mikke. It's very special. And just being so near, being on an island and being on an island where there's no concrete, no roads, no cars, and all the houses are made of wood, and it's actually super special, super unique, really, in this day, in this world where everything is so fast and busy and cars and concrete everywhere, and no lights either, not much lighting, so you really felt the dark of the night. And the beauty of the day and the differing colours, and when you looked out to the sea, and it was just quite magical, actually. And for me, it was the first time. I've never been as north in the world. So it was also, it's a special feeling being so north, especially for me. I live on a small island in the middle of the Atlantic. It's quite hot. So this was also very, very clear and sharp and refreshing. It was beautiful.
Yeah, for us it was quite a cold and wet summer this summer. But from where you came, Tenerife, that was a super hot summer. You said you had temperature up to 50 degrees here.
So in some places in the mountains, there were sustained temperatures of 52 degrees for 5 to 6 weeks. So very hot here.
And that is unusual here.
Summer, unusually hot, yeah. And by the coast, 40 degrees. So coming to Norröra, where the temperature was 22 degrees, was just bliss. But more than that, more than the temperature, it was just the energy of the place and also swimming in the Baltic Sea. It was so clean and so fresh and it was cold, but it was somehow, after a while, it became warm, and it was just very invigorating being either on the island or in the sea or on the boat. It was just wonderful and so peaceful and to be able to walk around, and there's really nobody there when we were there. These are all very, very special, I think, in this.
Yeah, this was in this, August. It was still summer and still holidays, but yeah.
Yes, and yet such a quietness and a suchness that touched me deeply. And I'm always telling, I'm an osteopath in Tenerife, and I'm always telling my patients about Aurora and how wonderful it was. And we sigh and think, oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, we went into the village also, and it's you were kind of stunned that all the houses are wooden houses, but for us it's like normal. We have so much wood, but here all the houses are stone, and we think that's kind of picturesque. But you thought the wooden houses were, the old wooden houses were picturesque. And
I do. I also think there's something quite wonderful about wooden houses, and the stone houses here are lovely, but there's a sort of hardness about them, and the stone that's used is often volcanic. But generally, even all through my life, I've loved wooden houses. I think there's a softness, there's a nurturing quality about living on wood and standing on wood, and the way it supports you, and there's a spring in the wood, and I like to dance, and I always like to dance on a wooden floor. I feel there's a playfulness somehow about a wooden floor or a wooden house, and then to have a fireplace is even more wonderful.
Yeah, it's a little bit softer, actually. If you drop something on a wooden floor, it can survive, but on a stone floor, most of the time it breaks.
It does, yes, yes, that's very true. So I was delighted to be staying in Mikke and Anna's house, and I have my own little room and a lovely window, and I looked out onto their garden, and Mikke's wife Anna, she's doing such a wonderful job with growing the plants, and it was just very, very special, and it touched me deeply, yes.
Yeah, we were lucky also. We could go on excursion one day out to Norrpada, which is further out from, I think it's about 8 nautical miles straight east. And that was also quite a different experience for you.
This was also a very memorable experience, going out on the boat, and Mikke was driving, and it was actually quite a windy day actually coming back. But we went to this uninhabited island, or I think there's one house there, and we anchored for the day, and we picnicked and we fished, and this was also, and we swam, and it was also very, very unique because there was nobody there. So all you were experiencing was the force of the nature, and it was a lovely day. So when I say force or power, it wasn't that we had a windy day or it was sunny, it was warm. But just the power, the healing power, I feel, of the nature, the quietness, and just knowing that when we walked on the island, there was actually nobody there. And for me, I find that's quite unique, because I think nowadays it's harder and harder to find space where there are no other people. And so to find these islands, and there's no shops, and there's no, this island didn't even have electricity. It's really was fantastic. So I loved that day, and just being able to be there and really feel the nature and the quality of it, and I noticed how my mind was much quieter and my body felt at ease, and and also swimming, and it all seemed as though that's how it should be. And yet we live in these busy worlds. So I felt very blessed to be there with Mickey and Anna and to have this opportunity. And I felt it was a very healing experience to be on Aurora and to be on the boat in the archipelago, and also on this island anchored, and just being there, sitting and just contemplating and feeling the birds and the little waves and the emptiness of it all. And yet it was so full, completely full.
And then there's so many more islands around there. I mean, this, we were on a few islands, and there's supposed to be, someone have actually tried to count them, and about 27 or 30,000 islands out there. So it is an abundance of islands and that you can go to, and they all look a little bit different also.
It is, yeah. It's an amazing thought to feel that there are so many islands, and each one is different. Each one has its own personality. And even when we arrived, we sort of went to this uninhabited island. We went through other islands, and each one was so different and had little beaches or little forests and or rocky areas. And I'm thinking of it now, and it's making me smile. And it was just very unique experience for me, and I'd like to repeat it.
Yeah, because you have traveled a lot before. You have seen a big part of the world before, and as you said before, you traveled up to Sweden with a motorbike from England, but. Where have you been traveling before?
So in the 90s, my husband and I, we traveled from London to Singapore on a motorbike, which took a couple of years. And then from Singapore, we shipped the motorbike to Australia. So we rode east for many days and through Europe and into Greece, and then we entered into amazing countries, Muslim countries of Turkey, Iran, and Pakistan, and then into India, and then into East Asia, Thailand and Malaysia and Singapore. So this was an amazing experience, all the time making our way east and feeling the tropics and the mosquitoes and the frenetic lives of people and poverty and colors and chaos, a lot of desert, a lot of areas where they were impassable nearly, and going through rivers. And so it was a very exciting, wonderful, vivid, colorful, amazing journey.
So many people from Sweden fly to Thailand, and it's difficult to know how far it is to Thailand. I don't know how long a flight is to Thailand, maybe 14 hours or something. But not many people know how far, for real, it is to Thailand, because they fly there and they step off in Thailand from Arlanda, for example. So how far is it to Thailand when you actually drive there?
I don't think I can tell you offhand. I remember we were in one place in Pakistan, and it said we were 9,000, just coming up to 10,000 miles from London.
But so, how many days would you say it took us from London to Calcutta, for example?
So probably about a year, and then another year from Calcutta to Thailand, to Singapore.
It gives perspective.
It does give perspective, but we weren't driving every day, and we would spend quite some time in different countries and different areas, and we explored. Although we were traveling east every day, we did go north. So in Pakistan, for example, we went up to the Chinese border and the Karakum Highway, which is a road that was built jointly between China and Pakistan. So we had detours. But I think traveling by road, and it is possible, is a pretty amazing way to travel. And it's nice to travel by plane, and we can get to where we want to go fast. But traveling by road, you really feel the countries and the way the geography changes and the way the food changes and the way the people change and how they look and their attitudes. So for us, I think it was a very special experience. A bit tough sometimes because we camped and we were living quite wild, but one that is full of memories and a very enlightened and positive experience for us, yes.
Yeah, and on a motorbike, I mean, we went out to our outing to Norrpodda from Norra, and we had a boat to pack things in. But on a motorbike, you can only have a few things. I think we probably had more things for our day outing than you had on your motorbike, right?
Yeah, yes, we had two panniers at the back, and then we had another big metal piece that my husband welded onto the frame of the motorbike, where we had the tent and also our sort of rain gear. And then we had a little tank bag for our clothes. We didn't have much clothes. And actually, the further we went, the less we needed. So I think we were quite laden when we left London, but by the time we got through to Turkey and into Iran, we felt that we needed less, and we maybe had one or two cooking pots, and we would often cook with a fire, and we slept out most of the time in a tent, or many people would offer us their string beds to sleep in the desert or by the side of the road. So we were very, very open to everything, the nature, the people, and yet we felt very protected somehow.
I've heard some of your experiences during your travel, and we even looked at pictures, and it is amazing. And I also have experiences from traveling, and it is amazing to see other parts of the world and especially to travel there by land, so you actually can know how big the globe is and also appreciate the beauty of it and the diversity.
Yes, this was for us quite magical, and feeling as we went further east how it just became more tropical and more humid, the diversity of how the people looked and their attitudes going through Turkey and Iran and Pakistan, amazing countries, amazing people, very sad what's going on in the world. Sometimes the West's perception of these countries. But we had amazing experiences with the people, and they were so welcoming and so curious and so inquisitive. And so I think in the end, it gave us a very, very much an openness of understanding and accepting humanity. And we are all different, in different places in the world, we look different, we have different cultures, but underneath all of that, we're basically quite the same, and we have the same simple needs of love and our families and basic needs of food and sanitation and appreciation, I think, for the natural wonder of our planet.
Yeah, and today you live in the island of Tenerife, which is one of the Canary Islands. And here you have a camper van. And you also see the islands are quite different here too, right?
So for the last 20 years, I've lived in Tenerife. I think it's the biggest of the islands. And we have 7 islands. Some of them are very green, and some of them are more desert and dry and a bit more windy. And Tenerife has this big volcano called the Teide volcano. And most of the population live around the coastal areas. It's a beautiful island full of contrast and microclimates and these barrancos, which are these deep ravines, which hold a wonder of nature in these barrancos, in these ravines. And so, and no barranco is the same. So they're always interesting to explore, and they can be quite wide or quite slim, very majestical. And then we have the other islands of La Gomera and La Palma, El Hierro. They're all very green, very quaint. There's not so much tourism. El Hierro is one of the few sustainable islands in the world, and it has its own hydroelectricity, and it's very ecological. There's Gran Canaria as well. It has some nice lakes on the top of Gran Canaria. And then we have Lanzarote and Fuerteventura. So they're much more dry and arid and desert-like. They're nearest to Africa, to the Western Sahara. And so they're a lot more yellow and dry. And they have their own beauty in a stark sort of way.
And how is it to live on an island in the middle of the Atlantic?
I think it's wonderful, and I think I've been very blessed to live here. Energetically, I think there's a deep contrast between the volcano and the sea, the Atlantic Sea. So I think Tenerife has it draws a lot of energy, a lot of polarity here. And I'm able to work here and sustain myself. And there's a very international community of people that live here. And there's a lovely sense of the people that were here, the Canarian people. So they're very open and welcoming. I have many Canarian friends. And so, yeah, I think I'm very lucky that I have found myself on this island.
I have to ask, because your first living situation, your first living quarters here, or one of the few first, was in a cave. So you're the only person I know that's been actually living in a cave. So please tell us more about your cave life.
So after traveling across to Singapore, from England to Singapore to Australia, we eventually returned back to the UK, to London, and we worked, my husband and I. And then some years later, we came to Tenerife, and we were traveling again on the motorbike through Europe, through Spain, and then we took the ferry to Tenerife. And we thought maybe we would only maybe be in Spain or Tenerife for 6 months, but in the end we spent 2 years and we found this wonderful cave up a little bit in the mountains, looking down to the sea, very quiet. And so we ended up, we lived there for 2 years, and it was a very, very wonderful experience to be living almost inside a mountain with the mountain on top as your roof, and then looking down the mountain towards the sea. And it gave us a great opportunity to have quiet time, to meditate. It was almost like an inner journey. We grew vegetables. We really focused on being well and on being fit and strong, and we walked and we did lots of Tai Chi, and it was a different journey to the external journey of traveling. This one was more of an inner focus. And probably for 2 years, we really didn't see very many people during that 2 years, and we lived with no electricity and no running water. So it was a very physical time that maybe allowed us to reconnect with our ancestral self, our Neanderthal self, which was very, very revealing on a level that allowed us to go deeper into ourselves and not be distracted by civilization and the busy world that is. So it was a great time and a great opportunity.
And you were mainly cooking over open fire and yeah.
So we cooked all the time there with open fire, and we also cooked with open fire when we were traveling as well. And I love cooking with open fire and wafting and getting the fire going. And then we also made bread. In fact, we made a lot of bread in Australia, making big fires and then letting the fires calm down, and then digging a little hole under the fire and then putting the dough into and mixing with the earth and the cinders, the charcoals of the fire that was burning down. And yeah, we made great bread, actually.
You could teach survival, maybe not in a Nordic country, but definitely down here.
Yes. Actually, we did live wild as well in Spain, actually just south of Granada, in a beautiful area called the Alpujarras. And it was very cold, actually, there. And we also lived by the fire, and we were living in an old house with no electricity and no heating, no running water. And I would say that's slightly more hard when the climate's colder, definitely. So I have full respect for you Nordic people living up in the cold climates of Sweden and Norway and Finland. I can't imagine how it was in the days when we were all having to survive in England as well, in Ireland, in Iceland, all these places. I think we were maybe a stronger human being then somehow.
So thank you so much, Lisa. And thank you for being on the podcast. And welcome back to Norröra soon. Thank you very much, Lisa.
Thank you, Mickey, for having me. Such a blessing. Thank you very much.
This episode was recorded at Lisa's home in Tenerife. If you want to hear more about Lisa's travels, please go to Van Life Sverige podden, episode 173. You can find us on Facebook under the name Norra Saltkråkan podden. Hit the subscribe button and the like where it's possible. Thank you so much for listening.
Summertime in my mind, you and me by the sea, running round, look how to find each other's will. Well, I'm a boy, you're a girl, I'm a man, bringing a can filled with milk, you're like silk, when I whisper, please be near. Oh, be near. Winter time in my mind, sun and snow makes me blind, you look up, I look down. Summertime, and we were there without no fear. Drinking beer, you drop a tear on the ground. A great sound when you whisper, please be near. We can chase each other around, my friend. You're a part of me, sweet life. Sometimes it hurts like a knife inside of me. Maybe inside of you too. For sure inside of me, I feel free. Lonely time in my mind, children playing on the ground. They grew up, they grew strong, they are rebels all along. Something new, a forgotten shoe on the street. Feel the heat from crying eyes, wounded ears, looking for someone to be near. Oh, be near.